all sales and 50% of merchandise sales to the Hot Shots Employee Relief Fund. Support Hot Shots. Support local.
Setley Jewelers has been family-owned since 1946. They offer jewelry for special occasions and offer appraisals, repairs, and custom jewelry pieces.
Recently, I had a couple come in, and she had lost her mom, and she brought her jewelry in, and we took all her stones out, and we recreated these pieces that she could wear and just continue, you know, passing down to her kids.
Setley Jewelers in Lamp and Lantern Village in Town and Country. Online at setley.com.
Tim McKernan here for Design Air Heating and Cooling. Their business is essential to your comfort and safety, so Design Air will continue to offer services for emergency repair, installation, and preventative maintenance while taking all of the recommended precautions to eliminate physical contact. For more information on air purifiers, please visit designairservice.com. And for all of your heating and air conditioning needs, contact the official HVAC company of the Ryan Kelly Morning After, Design Air Heating and Cooling.
There's no better time to get those gardens and greens around the house, and Franklin Group and Associates is here for you. They are a generational family-owned business carrying a wide variety of locally grown annuals, perennials, vegetables, hanging baskets, flowering shrubs, and potted plants. They are currently taking personal delivery orders and providing curbside pickup. They work with the best landscape designers in the area and are waiting to fill your order. Call Jack now at 314-422-7056 to experience a product second to none.
Oh, we haven't listened to this in a long time. This is the Black Keys, Gold on the Ceiling.
Well, every Thursday in the 4 o'clock hour, we have Scott Sherman, attorney at law. Today's no exception. Scott, how you doing?
Frank?
I guess.
Doing great.
Why
I didn't
delay?
Have his microphone on.
He was busy producing.
I was putting a name up on the screen, and I didn't have Scott's mic on.
Okay. Well, I will be introducing you officially after I remind people all that Window World does for the show and all they do for charity. Their charity of choice this year is Action for Autism. There's a trivia night scheduled for August 14th. Had to be moved back for obvious reasons, so you still have time to jump in on that. We'll tell you more about it as we get closer. I'm gonna keep pecking away at this until I get at least one response, and it's what I talked about yesterday, the day before that. I'm not sure I understand why I never seem to get donations for charity from women. I don't expect it to be from, I don't expect it from anybody, but I know there are women with me. Here are the women who probably have money. Women who worked hard and saved and invested, whatever. Women who have family money, women whose husbands passed away and made sure they were well taken care of. You're out there, and some of you are listening. And I never seem to hear or get any response. I'm not going to shame you or call you out. But if you're out there and you're female or male, but I'm going directly to the women because I don't understand this. If you're out there and you're female and you have a few bucks and you'd like to help us out with this charity, this Action for Autism, you email me at frankopinion@yahoo.com. I will not go on the air and go, oh, well, finally, I had to force her to come. No, I'll just thank you for the donation and for maybe opening the door to remind some other women out there. If we're going to talk about, you know, equality and everything across the board, being charitable is not just for men. That's it. Window World, the number one selling replacement window in the USA. Also, has the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval, which only one other window has. They have a tremendous warranty, on and on and on. It's all on their website. I hope you'll check it out. WindowWorldSt.Louis.com.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong?
We're going to learn some things today. We do every Thursday. I've learned so much from this segment. really mean. I was like to say I could probably pass the bar. I know that's not true. I don't think I could ever pass the bar exam. It's not for sissies. And not for people of even just, I think, average intelligence. A lot of work, a lot to know. But this guy passed it. He is an actual attorney at law. I'm going to give you the phone numbers, and he is here to help you save money, save time. It goes beyond that. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Now let's officially welcome Scott Sherman, everybody.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, guys.
And how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Feel good.
All right, we got calls. People are catching on how this works. One more time for the numbers. We're jumping right to the phones. One line, I think one line is open. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Vic, you're up first. Thank you for calling 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hey, Scott Sherman. How are you?
Great, Vic. How are you?
I'm doing great. And Frank and the gang, how are you all?
Well, how are we doing?
Doing
well,
great.
We don't care, buddy. Yep, Vic, we're okay.
Yeah. Well, good. And I'll let you know, Frank, when I go to your advertisers, whether I purchase anything or not, I always let them know I'm AM in the PM. And I've been listening for a long time back to your 104 days.
So that would have been started in 87. So you listen. Okay. You started listening at least 87, 88, 89, probably somewhere in there.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Okay.
I'll try and be as brief as I can. My wife and I live in Illinois, but my other three siblings live in the St. Louis area. Older brother, younger brother, both in Arnold, and neither one of them care about this. But my parents' home and my sister's home are both on the south side of the city. And my sister and her lazy husband and their three kids have been taking advantage of my parents for a long time. Like back, my brother-in-law still owes my parents somewhere between 15 and 18 grand from a failed business adventure. And they've just... all of their kids have taken advantage of my mom, and my father passed away 12 and a half years ago. My mom passed away about 8 days ago. And my sister, got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer about the start of the year, but she's been my mom's main caregiver. And, she's the only one that knows what my parents' finances and stuff are. And now, after talking to my younger brother, I understand that she's going to try and clean our parents' home out, and then she's going to try and move as much of her stuff into my mom's home, and then try and sell her home, and then try and sell my parents' home. Well, my parents have a will. I haven't seen it, but I understand it's very simple, that everything gets sold and divided between us siblings. And so she's trying to incorporate selling her house into my mom and dad's estate, and I'm pretty furious about it. And I'm wondering Go ahead, Frank.
None of this is a surprise, and it's so. Here's the deal. I'm gonna turn it over to Scott, but I'm not a lawyer, but I know this just from living. Whenever money comes into any situation, a lot of stuff gets shaken out of the trees, and you find out who people really are, how greedy they are, or how unselfish they are. It's a mess. And your situation is not at all uncommon. You got a lot going on here. Scott, you can take it.
Thanks, Frank. First, Vic, all of us want to give our condolences to you for your mom's passing. As far as getting an action plan.
Let me say this, Scott. It's for me, it's not about the money. It's the principle of the thing. I'm really sick and tired of my sister and her family taking advantage of my mom, and I want to put a stop to it. That's all.
That's right. And your parents also made accommodations for how these things were going to be distributed. This will that you speak of, this estate planning document, those are their final wishes. And whoever the executrix, that's a female executor, they have to follow this. It's not up to your sister to decide what she feels like doing. Your parents put down on paper what their wishes were, and they need to be followed by the letter of that document. Who is the executor or the executrix of that will, if you know?
I don't know if there is even an executor.
Has anybody, and you said it was in St. Louis, have you looked onto CaseNet in Missouri to see if someone has filed for probate on this estate, this will?
No, I have not.
Okay. First thing I would do is, and you said about the houses, I'm not sure if it's one house or two houses. Your parents' house, is that different than this greedy sister and her SOB husband? Or the two?
Yes, it's okay. Two separate houses.
Do you have access to that house? Do you have keys to that door, to that house?
No, I do not.
Well, I'd go over there, and I would see if I could get myself in there without breaking the law and videotape everything in that place before it gets cleaned out so it doesn't disappear. The second thing I would do is, and it might be the first thing because it's quicker, I'd be on the phone with some kind of estate lawyer. I don't know if you know the lawyer that drafted this or some other lawyer, to make sure that whoever that executor is or the person in charge does exactly what your parents say. And the third thing I would do is find out how this deed of your parents' house was recorded. And if the deed is recorded in such a way that it passes without probate, that would be recorded in the City of St. Louis Recorder Deeds Office. I think that's online now. So, you know, this idea that your sister can just go grab houses and sell them and do this and do that, that's a bunch of BS. And if she is the executrix of this estate, she'd be in real huge trouble if she's not doing exactly what your parents said, and that wasn't clean the joint out and keep the things you want and then try to move stuff around to your benefit. I suspect that your sister that was the closest to them, who, I don't know if she's the troubled one or not, I don't want to put labels on people, but if she's the executrix of this estate, you guys are going to get screwed. But she's going to break the law. But before that happens, I would have somebody over there opening that door and making sure that all those items are documented before they start disappearing, if they haven't disappeared already.
All right.
And if you need somebody that's an estate lawyer to look into the situation or send some letters around, send me an email and I'll send you some names of some people. But, you know, it might cost a few dollars, but again, if you say it's not about the money, then you're going to have to spend a little money to stop this, because it's like a train getting out of the station.
Because it is about the money for her.
Her motivation is to rob you guys.
Right. My sister's on Social Security. My brother-in-law has been on full disability for about 15 years, and they have no money, and she thinks that she's going to sell their house and take her share of the profits from her parents' house. To get them another house.
Yeah, it's unfair, so they're going to do horrible things. It's what Charles Manson's people did. Yeah, it was unfair, so they just went in and started killing people.
We're running out of time, Vic. I just want to ask, you're this loser brother-in-law who's on disability for 15 years, is he really disabled, really?
He probably is now, but he wasn't when it all started. It was a simple eye injury, and he was too lazy, didn't want to work and all. So yeah, that's really what I need to do. What I really need to do is get an estate planner, lawyer, or whatever, and go through Scott's email account.
Do you have Scott his email Sherman address?
Law Office of Scott Sherman at gmail.com.
Hey! Hey, Vic, did you say your sister? The sister, does she have pancreatic cancer? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Which makes it that much more difficult. You know, I wish her the best. I hope she beats cancer. I don't wish her any ill in that respect, but she's taken advantage. advantage of me and my brothers in that.
Yeah.
And I just can't put up with that.
Rick, sorry I have to go through all this. Shoot that email off, and thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
All right. Lines open, 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Jerry, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott Sherman.
Hi, Jerry. How you doing?
Oh, fine. I just had a couple quick questions about a beneficiary deed.
Sure.
I have two children. They're grown. And they both be on the same beneficiary deed?
I think so. I think you can put multiple people on that as the beneficiary. The thing you want to be careful about is when you designate them as the beneficiary, how are you going to designate them as the owners if and when you pass away and then it goes to them? And for people that are like, what? What's he talking about? You can put it in as joint tenants. You can put it in as tenants in common. You can put it in as joint tenant with right of survivorship, and each one of those designations for multiple people have different rules associated.
Especially now with the marijuana laws where you can access marijuana, you can be joint tenants. You can
Far out.
Well, thanks, everybody.
I like that one.
So it was fun.
Yeah.
You're just mad you didn't think of it, Dan.
No, he is. Jerry, is that helpful, I hope?
Yes. My other question is, does me and my wife need separate beneficiary, make out separate beneficiary deeds?
Well, maybe not, because if your house is titled joint tenant with right of survivorship, unless you died at in the same car wreck or something, one would become the sole owner of that property. So if you wanted to do it now and you guys are both alive, yeah, I would say, you know, in the case of if Jerry goes first, then if he goes, then it would automatically go over to her. And then when she dies, then it would go down her beneficiary deed line. Same thing for if she went before you. So I guess thinking out loud, it would be smart to do that in case, let's say, for instance, you did it and she didn't. You died first. Your beneficiary deed wouldn't mean anything because the house would go over to her fully.
Yeah.
So I think this is something that a real estate lawyer can do in about 10 minutes. And so if you want to talk to somebody about it, even if you don't want to pay him to actually do it, give me an email. I'll send you somebody to walk you through it. But I think the safe way to do it is to assume that you would die together in a plane crash or something. And that way you should both have beneficiary deeds so that if neither one of you predeceases the other, then it goes the way that both of you would want. And if you have a discrepancy over the way you want it to go, you want it to go to both kids and she doesn't like one of them, and then you're going to have a battle on your hands as to whose designation wins. So these things get complicated, but the best way to do it is walk through all the possibly weird scenarios, then either, you know, take the advice they give you probably for nothing, or pay them a couple of bucks and they'll fix it up.
Jerry, do you have Scott's email address?
Law office is scottsherman@gmail.com.
Now, listen to this guy.
Thank you, Jerry.
Serious listener. Jerry, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. And we go to Tammy. Tammy, thank you for holding, and welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
Well, hi, Scott Sherman and the gang. I am AM and the PM.
Thank you, Tammy.
Bye, Tammy.
Hey,
hi. Okay, here's my question. It might be twofold, but my husband and I bought into a farm with relatives, but we got our own loan. So we have 11% interest. So we found out that one of the other members is not paying their loan. So say five of them have a loan together, but one isn't paying on theirs. If they foreclose, do we still get our 11% of the farm?
This is all yours.
You know what? There was a show on last night about these kind of real estate heir properties, HEIR properties, where so many people own the thing
that really nobody owns the thing.
Hey, you just gave me a great idea. A piece of property that somebody who inherited it wanted to rent it out as a place for people to stay. Airbnb. H-E-I-R.
That's right.
Huh?
There you go.
Come
yeah.
on. Thank you.
Hey.
Okay.
You're two
Sorry,
for two.
Tammy. It made Tammy laugh. She's laughing like she's laughing. Airbnb or Airbnb. If so, go ahead.
So is this set up as a sort of entity where you own shares in it, or is it Tammy and husband and then three cousins and then another, you know, uncle and two friends, and everybody's got a little chunk of the same piece of real estate? Or is it one thing where it's like Farm LLC? How's this done?
Okay, so like our loan is ours separate, and we have a deed that says, because we've paid our loan off, that said, you know, we have an 11% interest of this farm, and then theirs is an LLC. But one of their members is either A, not able to pay it because of what's going on now, or whatever.
So this, how is it titled? Is it titled in the LLC, or is it titled with you guys as sort of 11% interest owners in the LLC?
That, both. It's titled both.
I believe that if they foreclose on it, they can force the sale of the entire property. But you would then be... have an interest in part of that after they pay off what these people, I'll call them the deadbeat partners, haven't paid. So they can force the sale of this thing based on the way you're explaining that it is deeded. Or they can partition the property, saying this, okay, Tammy and husband, you own 11%. We're going to buy you out through the court, and we're going to get this whole thing free and clear because your partners are foreclosed on. So I believe that you can get your equity stake in the 11%, but it is such a bad operation on the way this thing is set up, you're so vulnerable to these deadbeat partners that you could either A, lose the property and maybe get fair value, or lose the property and get not fair value, because if they go to court and the court decides this thing, or they try to, you know, goes to the courthouse steps and the sheriff sells it for 20% of its value, you get 11% of 20% of its value. So 11% of what? And so right now, you might be the ones, you and your husband, that think about a partition action where you say, okay, we're going to go to court and tell the judge, we want out of this, but we don't want to be subject to foreclosure values. We want fair market value, and we're going to get ourselves away from these people before they ruin our investment. So there are ways that you could offensively, sort of on the offense, partition this property, get more money for it, before you wait defensively and get your share of a screw job, which is really what your bad partners are setting you up for.
Tammy, the big question.
So what if it's only... Oh, go ahead.
No, I didn't realize you had more. Go ahead.
Well, the only other part is, what if it's only... So if the other three or four that are in, and it's just one, are they able to kick him out and keep the farm,
a partition action can be done by any one of the partners, no matter what their percentage is. If they're in default, I believe then the mortgage company for that partnership could force the sale, and that's where
could get in trouble.
You get jettisoned out of the deal at a much lower dollar amount than you would in the fair market. So if you're going to use partition because you have bad partners, you should do it offensively. And before you do anything and you get caught flat-footed with a foreclosure notice at the courthouse steps, you need a real estate lawyer. What county and state is this farm located?
It's in Missouri.
Okay, well, that's good enough.
And I'm not sure which. And I'm
You're not like in Kansas City or anything. I mean, you're around.
No.
So I got somebody who, they are real estate experts. They would be interested in talking with you. I might be a little bit off on this, but I would say the most important thing I have said is, watch out. Bad stuff is going to happen to you soon.
Okay.
All right, Tammy.
All right. Yeah, that is good. Great.
And the big final question, if you need Scott, do you have his email address?
lawoffice of scottsherman@gmail.com.
Listen to this genius woman. Thank you, Tammy. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
On to, phone numbers, 314-821-0590, 855-282-8255. Sheila, welcome to 590 The Fan. Thank you for calling. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Great, Sheila. How are you?
Good. And Frank, in my defense, women do donate, because I was the one who bought that shirt off Scott many years ago that Limey had signed and you signed. Mm.
The okay. Tim shirt.
Oh, my God, no way.
Well, no, women don't. You did. Women, plural, you. You did. You did buy the shirt. But when it comes to the big checks, they, I don't know where they are. Nonetheless, that's for another time. What do you have for Scott?
Okay, and please forgive me. I just thought it was a common thing to have title on death and payable on death on your accounts. And I was talking to a friend who lives in another state in Louisiana. She had never heard of it. And I thought, is this like something local to Missouri? Or
no, my answer to that is no. Scott, go ahead.
No, most states do have TOD and POD. Louisiana is a weird state for a lot of reasons. One, they eat alligators, which is very strange. But they also have civil law, which is based in sort of the French common law. And that's a different set of laws than the other 49 states have that are based on English common law. So you'll see in Louisiana, because they call things parishes instead of counties, you'll see some strange stuff that they do because of French civil law. Now, I don't know if POD and TOD are one of those strange things, but it was common in English common law to have TOD, POD things for, you know, accounts and stuff to stay out of probate. And
what's P? The POD?
Payable on debt. It means the same thing. It's
same
just
thing as
transferable on debt. So the POD is like a bank account or a brokerage account. Something that isn't titled but is still documentable. So, you know, securities, bank accounts, stuff like that is just POD. And there probably are three or four other states that have weird rules about it. For instance, joint tenant with right of survivorship, which is one of the most powerful and easiest ways to simply and cost-effectively transfer real estate upon the death of two partners, mainly married couples, is a Missouri thing that not every state, whether it's common law state or of Louisiana, do. Some states, and I think Illinois is one where they either don't have it or it's tougher to do, but when you have a house and a husband and wife own it and one of them passes away and it's joint tenant with right of survivorship, the surviving spouse gets it without probate. Man, that's a standing ovation for non-probate transfers. And some states don't have it. I think California is another one that might not have it. But it is generally common for POD and TOD to be available for both titling non-real estate like cars, trucks, boats, and for POD for account, bank accounts and brokerage accounts.
All right.
Yeah, and I was telling her I thought it was a good idea, and she had no idea what I was talking about. I said, I thought it was just kind of like something you did. So thank you for clearing that up.
All right. Tammy, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening.
It was Sheila.
Sorry. Tammy was before Sheila. Hey, when it comes to women, they can make your head spin, you know? Lines are open, too. We'll get right to our next caller after I give you the phone numbers, 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Guy, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Mr. Yard Sale.
Hey, buddy.
I'm A.M. to P.M. And before I get to my question, there's an accident on eastbound 70 right past Lindbergh against the center wall.
Are those your flashers, or do you have a turn signal on?
Turn signal on.
Okay.
And, right. Anyway, my question is, one of my coworkers has a car he bought over in Illinois from dealership. He filled out online to drop it off for service. He put it in an envelope, dropped it in their little drop box, somebody fished his keys out and stole his car, and I was wondering if the dealership at all was responsible for, you know, not having his keys where they couldn't search him out or any kind of liable on, you know, the car being stolen.
No, okay, not, I would, Scott always is nice enough to allow me to take a shot at this, so if you don't mind.
No, I absolutely want to hear what your analysis is.
I think that the dealership should be responsible. If the keys that are left are accessible to a crook and they get, maybe that should have been done a different way. I could be wrong. I think if all we know are the facts you just gave us, dropped the car off, put the keys in the box, car got stolen, I'd say, yeah, that's a dealership insurance issue, Scott.
You know, this is one of those sort of bar exam questions, sort of yes, if, no, but, maybe, unless. So if you add a few facts, you take some things out, the answer can change. But I like
Frank's... Guy's turn signal is still on. Guy, your turn signal
is still on. Guy is using what's called the highest degree of care while driving.
Well, I don't know that that's
the most, it's also the most annoying degree of care.
I've got a headset on, so I don't have the phone up to my ear.
Stick your hand out the window.
Okay. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Scott.
So maybe, but here's how the facts change. The fact that there's a drop box means there's some sort of safety system in place by the car dealership. But the fact that somebody got into the drop box means that it isn't that safe. So if the drop box is just a lid, like, you know, those old little metal things where you know, somebody would have a... Boy, that is annoying.
Frank's got his turn signal on.
That's me. I was.
Oh, sorry.
I apologize.
Ed, like guys, a little kid in school, I thought it was funny.
Ed, guy's turn signal to your impressions.
Apologize to Guy, Frank.
Sorry, Guy, I'm sorry. I tried to. I pretended I was your turn
myself.
Signal. Well, thank you. I pretended I was your turn signal, and it was not true. So back to Scott. So
what would really be that funny is if you pretended you were Homer Simpson sitting at the red light with the turn signal on at the same time.
It's weed, moron. Hey, I can't believe it. I'm a turn signal.
Oh, homie, you always do that. You're getting so old. Guy, aren't you glad you called?
I'm always glad I called.
And now back to Scott's answer about is the dealership liable if you drop your car off and somebody steals your car?
Yeah, pretty much. No, it's if the lockbox, if Dropbox isn't locked, and you just open it up and get access to it, that's probably negligent on the part of the dealership.
But I know I'm guessing. It's foreseeable. Have you ever used these, Scott? These where you drop your key off? It's just like a spring hinged. Am I right here,
yeah.
Guy? You open it, you pop the keys in, and the little spring thing goes back. Anybody can come behind you and open it and take a coat hanger and grab the envelope that you left it in.
If they took a blowtorch, a acetylene torch, the thing, and opened it up, that's probably enough safety. So I would say it depends on what the lock bar or the drop box looks like. What they should have, or what's feasible, is you open it up, kind of like a security drop box or at a bank, like a safe deposit, like one of those night deposit things. You open it up, you put it in, and it locks, and it goes into the building. So I think if the dealership has had this or has heard about this before, I think they're negligent because their system of dropping off your keys sucks. It's really just ripe for... It's like putting it in the bushes or under a plastic, one of those fake rocks. It's not really a security system. It's just a drop-off. So if it's more complicated and more secure than that, then no. So the more safe and secure that drop box, the less liable the dealership. I'd like to see a picture of the drop box, and then I would say probably. But then you add the element of somebody doing an intentional act of stealing, and oftentimes that will cut off the liability of places where you keep your vehicles or keep your stuff. So I'm about 60-40 in the not liable, but I want to see a picture of that drop box.
Okay.
So maybe.
I will see if I can arrange that and get a picture of that drop box.
Well, I'm sure you could. It's a business. They haven't changed it.
What if it's one of those deals where they have that, like, you know, how they put mail through a front door? They have those little hinges.
That's what we just said.
On
we
the garage door, it. And they drop it in? Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. what we just
He doesn't
said.
Listen to the show for
No, I was listening cow. To Charlie Brennan.
Whew, guy, I'm sorry. So sorry. You have Scott's email address if you need it?
Yes, I do. LawOfficeOfScottSherman@gmail.com.
That is exactly right, guy. Thank you. And I must say, yeah, chances are better, Scott, would you agree, better chance that they are liable than not.
I think it's definitely worth for his friend to make a claim with the dealership's insurance instead of just taking their word for it that too bad, so sad. I think there is an opening here for liability. I really do. That's a dangerous way to have something valuable lifted off their lot.
All right, we got to jump. Guy, good luck with this, and thank you for listening, okay?
Thank you. You guys have a great day.
Appreciate it. I have a real quick story that ties into what Guy's talking about. I think I've told it over the years twice. There's a friend of mine who still lives in St. Louis. Years and years ago, he dropped his brand-new Corvette off for the first service, like the oil changes. It was new. The dealership, by the way, I might add, is no longer in business. This Chevy dealer doesn't exist anymore in St. Louis. He was supposed to come and get it later that day, and they said they said something like, well, we found a couple little things. They're covered under the warranty. We'd like to get those taken care of before you pick it up tomorrow. Tomorrow became 2 days, 3 days, and there seemed to always be something. He got real suspicious. This dealership was in the St. Louis area. He went down unannounced and found his new Corvette in the body shop, and they were trying to rebuild the entire front of it. One of the employees who was supposed to be moving it around from where it was parked to the service department, decided to try some, lay a little rubber and see what could, and ran it into the building. Slammed it right into the dealership. And Scott, I'll let you, I know the outcome. And he fought them for months for a new car. He did not want his Corvette with a front end that had been replaced. Scott, do you believe that in the end the dealership had to give him a new car, or it was too bad, so sad?
New car. Because of the differential in value between what it was before they wrecked it and what it was after it was repaired.
It went to court, and there's something that in the dealership paperwork, all they had to do legally was, to the best of their ability, bring it back to the way it was. And he got rid of it, and I don't blame him.
Oh, it's
if you've ever had a severely damaged car, even if it's in your mind, it's not the same.
No.
But they did not have to give him a new Corvette.
Is this pre-Carfax?
This is pre-Carfax. That is correct. All right, let's go to Ken, I believe. Oh, real quickly, Ken, if you don't mind, 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Ken, say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott Sherman.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
All right. I am AM in the PM. Hallelujah. All right, I'm trying to make it quick for you. So I have a daughter that goes away to college and lives in a sorority house at a state school in Missouri. So when the pandemic hit, which flooded up right next to their spring break, they obviously got kicked out of the sorority house. Trying to make a long story short, I believe I owe them less than what they are telling me I owe them. So you pay the semester's expenses in three installments. I got a hold of somebody that, one of the kids that works, I guess, for the sorority, and it wasn't really an official bill, because you can get online and see what you owe, and they haven't updated that yet, but she told me there would be some type of refund coming back to us. However...
And there's always a however in life.
when I do the math, so they were there for 9 weeks, so 9 of 17 weeks, so... That comes out to 53% of the semester. So, in my eyes, I should owe 53% of the food bill and 53% of the rent bill. Well, what I was told yesterday from this student that represents the sorority is that we will owe like 85% of the semester's charges. So, I wanted to get your opinion on this and where I can go from here.
Do you mind?
No, I want you.
Do you mind if I take a run at this first?
Go ahead. Okay. I like it.
I think this, like a lot of things, is going to come down, for the most part, to what's the agreement say that you signed? What's the wording in the... And I assume you signed something to rent the sorority.
I read it, but it's such broad general terms, and I mean, that's really not going to apply to this pandemic.
Well, broad general terms might be good for you. Could be good or bad. Yeah. Scott, take it away. What else comes into play here?
These things have become so frustrating. I've had quite a few people, especially for the parents of or college students who are on a campus that was closed, and then they either went back to a state or a place where there's a shelter in place, and then the area where the school has a shelter in place. But not this particular.
I add one thing before, to my opinion. I do think, Ken and Scott, yes, you absolutely should have money coming back. And yes, I think 85% to pay that percentage of what you were paying is ridiculous. Go ahead, Scott.
I'm more inclined to be more with Ken's 53 than the 85. Because your daughter was living at the sorority house and paying for food and room and board, that stuff is impossible to perform when you can't live there. So just as if a tornado had hit the sorority house, and that would be terrible. But this is similar in that it's something that's no fault of your daughter's. It's really nobody's fault. And it's impossible to live there. So for those items, the room and board, the food and the living expense, I think you are excused from that. But then there's a question of, is there a dues responsibility that all members of the sorority have, whether they live there or not. So let's say you're a member of, you know, I don't know, the Tri-Delts. I don't even know which sorority. I don't care. But let's say you're a Tri-Delt and you don't live in the sorority house. You still have to pay dues whether you live there or not. So if they're trying to charge her for an annual due to be a Tri-Delt, then I think that's a legitimate charge because it doesn't matter if you live there or not. You're just a member of the organization. But for what they're trying, if they're trying to charge her for room and board, that is something you should be excused. And I would be looking for a force majeure clause in that agreement with them. And if not, then impossibility. It's impossible for her to live with a place that's hit by a tornado. It's impossible for her to live in a COVID-19 place where campus is closed. And I have fought with non-campus related apartment complexes, including those in Columbia. And if I could really wrap my hands around the throats of these bloodsuckers, I would. And yet, some of them aren't backing down, and some of them are. It just kind of depends. But for this sorority situation, hypothetically the Tri-Delts, if your daughter is being charged for room and board, I think that's excused from the moment campus was closed and the sorority house was closed. But then if there are charges for dues, annual dues, just to be a member of the sorority, I think that's legitimate. I don't know if that helps or not, but that's my analysis.
I think it's too bad, too, that he has to deal with the sorority over this and not the school. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Oh, and
the sorority.
And I'll say one great thing about the president of a university. There's one in Alabama that I'm dealing with. The president of the university wrote to me and to the father of this student and said he will personally contact this scum-sucking apartment complex off campus who still want to charge her for the last 2 months where it's impossible for her to stay and tell them that he personally wants them to waive that. That's a great university president of a university that has like 20,000 students. And I got that email yesterday, and that's really good work. But a lot of these places are playing chicken with the money that supposedly they owe and with the credit scores of these young people. And that's a terrible way to treat people in this situation.
We have to run. Ken, good luck with this. I think, yes, absolutely got money coming back. And no, I don't think anybody thinks you should have to pay 85% of what you paid before. If you need Scott, do you have his email address?
Yes, I do.
And we'll write to the president of the sorority if we have to, and we'll see if this student keeps their position.
I want him to prove he knows your email address. Go ahead, Ken.
Law office. of scottsherman at gmail.com.
No, that's not it. Oh, I'm kidding. Yes, it is. Thank you, Ken. Good luck. Thank you for listening, too. Appreciate it. Okay, now crunch time. Craig, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
How you doing, Scott?
Great, Craig. How are you?
Okay. Quick question. I've got a girlfriend.
You okay?
Yep, there you go. Got divorced in roughly 2000. Has no claim to the house up there. She now lives here, but has no claim to the house, but refinanced it and got her name off the loan, so it keeps popping up on her credit. Back then, I don't know if they had something in there that they would write in there that he has 50 days or a year, whatever, to refinance it, but it keeps getting bought out by other banks. Well, she'll call the bank, the loan, whoever it's with, and they'll say, yeah, we'll take you or we'll forgive you, but every time it gets resold, then problem comes up again. What do you suggest we do about that?
We're short on time, Scott. Take it.
Real estate lawyer or a challenge to her credit score, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion. There are companies that are now doing that for consumers. So if you send me an email, I'll put you in touch with a consumer lawyer. I'll put you in touch with a real estate person, and you can track which avenue is the easiest and best.
Okay.
And to do
well,
that,
I appreciate the help.
Well, and to do that, we got to make sure that you know Scott's email address.
It is Scott Sherman.
No! No! No.
Law Office of Scott Sherman at Gmail.
There you go. There you go. Thank you, Craig. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We can squeeze one more in if we can take care of Mary in 2 minutes. Make it 2.5 minutes. Mary, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Great. Okay. I have my son-in-law applied for unemployment, and he was denied with a statement that said his deductions were greater than or equal to more than his benefit payment was going to be. And we're all confused by that because his amount was supposed to be $384. We can't figure out how they could come up with that much out of, I guess, federal taxes, and he's married with no children.
Is he a recent COVID unemployed person?
Yes, car salesman.
Which state?
Illinois.
All right. Send me an email tomorrow. Send me an email today. I'll give you the name of my employment law person, and I'll have I'll have him contact my person, and then you'll get those. With all of the changes in this new world to how unemployment insurance works, the expansion of independent contractors and other folks that would be otherwise ineligible, there has to be a way to shoehorn him into these benefits, even in the broke and confused and clueless state of Illinois' work comp or unemployment system.
Unemployment, okay. All right.
Mary, this is your son, right?
Son-in-law, yes.
Oh, son-in-law.
My son-in-law. Mm-hmm. Okay. So everyone else at the dealership was eligible and are getting payments, but he was the only one denied. So we just
How old is your son-in-law, if I can ask?
He is 38.
38. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
He's going to reapply, I guess, May 4th, so this will help getting this information before that time.
Okay. Perfect. And if you need it, do you have Scott's email address?
I'm going to go with lawofficeofscottsherman@gmail.com.
You went with the right one. That is correct. Mary, good luck, and good for you looking out for your son-in-law. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for your help. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. I can hear in her voice she was attracted to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear it. No, I can hear it. They try to hide it, but sometimes they can't cover it up. How about an official thank you round of applause for Scott Sherman, everybody?
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
For the last time, throw that email address.
lawofficeofscottsherman@gmail.com.
All right, folks, I wouldn't go anywhere if I were you. We have news and then the Playhouse coming up and everything within it and around it. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
Coverings and Lewis.
I cannot recommend it highly enough.
590 The Fan. More than just sports. KFNS Wood River. St. Louis.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. President Trump claims his administration is deploying every tool to protect senior citizens during the ongoing coronavirus outbreak.
We've accelerated treatments, including remdesivir, which is reportedly showing encouraging preliminary results.
During a White House event, Trump noted that seniors are especially